大事をさあなわばとさあなおぶなとさあべやんからばばはいてじゃすべなばりたましとまべでべしゃばはいOm Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare HareHare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Okay, page 33. The Brahmana continued, My dear King, although you know everything, you have posed some questions which I shall try to answer according to what I have learned by hearing from authorities. I cannot remain silent in this regard.For a personality like you is just fit to be spoken to by one who desires self-purification. Okay, footnote 15. Srila Jiva Goswami implies that this Brahmana is Dattatreya, an incarnation of the Lord. Okay. Hmm? Yeah. You know, there'll be something there that they'll be able to tell from the Sanskrit and they can...According to Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, the Brahmana said, I respect you. Thus, though I have taken a vow of silence, I will break that vow for you. Thus I am speaking answers, as I have heard. These are not concocted. Right? So, one is that he's taken a vow of silence, so therefore when speaking about spiritual matters, that's still maintaining the vow of silence, though it breaks the external form of it, what most people would consider, because some people won't understand the difference.So generally it's just taken as you do the one and you don't bother. But because he's a transcendental person, therefore he'll understand, then this is done. And the other thing is, as he is heard, so it's not concocted, he's not making this up. So that's important. Once heard from authority, that's what you speak. Right? What you gain, that's what you give. Does that make sense? Yeah. Is it a different group or...Yeah? Oh. Same. Okay. Yes, I'm just thinking. Maybe it's a different group.More like a Lokanath Maharaj too. It's more kind of goes along. Srila Prabhupada elaborates. A saintly person doesn't wish to speak to anyone and everyone, and he is therefore grave and silent. Generally, a common man does not need to be advised. Unless one is prepared to take instructions, it is said that a saintly person should not address him. Although sometimes, because of great kindness, a saintly person speaks to ordinary men. Right? So, unless someone's interested to take instruction, why speak? Because otherwise you'll speak, you'll be wasting your time. But sometimes, as Prabhupada points out, they may speak, even though they may be not interested, with the idea of sparking some interest. Therefore, we do these, you know, big programs, and outside anybody can come. The idea is that by speaking from that, even if a few or even one, then it's worthwhile.You know, like that, what was it, some years back, then we were discussing that point about the Prabhupada's lecture in Stockholm to the university, and there happened to be the devotee there that was the only person out of 300 who took up Krishna consciousness. So that's the point. Just for one person, it's worth it. Right? So that's the principle. That you're looking for those who actually want to hear instruction. Right? It's not volume. Point is you keep doing, then by Krishna's grace, then that volume comes. But it's not the volume is the, how you say, without quality that you go. It means, in other words, it's volume and quality, not volume, you know, in quantity. Does that make sense? Yes.
It's also interesting that different creatures make the volume, but some take care of the training. Most of the time it's not the same person.
No, but as long as it's being done, then it works.
Yeah.
But if it's thought that taking care is not important, then that's not very mature. But if someone is good at making devotees, others good at training devotees, then that it works out. You know, then everybody has something they do for the mission, and it works nicely. But the idea is Prabhupada wanted you make devotees, but then most important is then you train them. Right? Because you're going to put in a lot of time and effort to make them into a devotee, but then they have the whole rest of their life. Who's going to take care of that? So that's the next step. Right. So many think that, oh, just by making more new devotees, then that's all the training you need. That's all right if you're just a brahmacharya and that's all you do. Okay. But the point is if there's more, then more is necessary. And since you're dealing with people who need more, especially when you deal with congregations, you need to have more explanation, more training. Okay. Is that... As Prahlad Maharaj, however, since he was not a common, ordinary man, whatever questions he posed would have to be answered, even by a great and exalted personality. Therefore, the saintly Brahmana did not remain silent, but began to answer. These answers, however, were not concocted by him. This is indicated by the words yata shrutam, meaning, as I have heard from the authorities. In the parampara system, when the questions are bona fide, the answers are bona fide. No one should attempt to create or manufacture answers. One must refer to the Shastras and give answers according to the Vedic understanding. Yeah. The words yata shrutam refer to Vedic knowledge. The Vedas are known as shruti because this knowledge is received from authorities. The statements of the Vedas are known as shruti praman. One should quote evidence from the shruti, the Vedas, or Vedic literature, and then one's statements will be correct. Otherwise, one's words will proceed from mental concoction. Okay, so that was that whole, I think it was Brahmatirtha discussion in, what's it, the Bhajan Kutir now? Because that's where the devotees were staying at that time. Prabhupada was staying there. So he had a discussion with him. And then they made a book out of that discussion, Perfect Questions, Perfect Answers. Because he wanted to know, and Prabhupada speaking from what has been heard. So that makes the perfection of both. So that's this is the principle. According to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, in the next three verses, 24 to 26, the Brahmin explains why he is detached from material activities. Because of insatiable material desires, I was being carried away by the waves of material nature's laws, and thus I was engaged in different activities, struggling for existence in various forms of life. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, I have been made to perform actions because of a thirst for desires which cannot be satisfied, which create the river of samsara. Because in the material world, desires themselves can't be satisfied. The modes of nature, because as soon as one thing comes up, they transform, it turns into something else, it just keeps going. Right? Does that make sense? And even if something you like it, but the point is because of the temporariness of the of rasa on the material platform, that one then has to try to continue that. Right? So it's not that here, means in the spiritual world we say they're not satisfied by talking about Krishna. That means it's so nice and so perfect and that taste doesn't go away that they just want to increase it more and more. But here, when it's unsatisfied, simply means there's no satisfaction because it keeps going away. There's nothing of substance.
Does that make sense? Yeah.
Just as one cannot cross a river, one cannot surpass the thirst for pleasure. Because right? It's a river, so it doesn't matter where you are, there's something more and more. You think, I'll get past these ones, there's more. You know, that. The rivers are filled with water by Indra's showers. Desired objects are never satisfying, though supplied profusely by Brahma. Just as a river, while flowing, rises up and covers grass, wood, stones, and thorns, I contact various bodies, birth after birth. Just as one has to escape from crocodiles and turtles in the river by various methods, I have to escape from my suffering by various actions. So the river just takes you through all kinds of varieties of situations and experiences. And so then, according to that, one will enjoy or suffer. And there'll always be difficulties that come up that you have to somehow or another get out of. So that's the whole idea. Is even though it appears to be a nice arrangement, it's not actually that great. Right? Because for the soul, there's nothing there. So it's the soul's trying to gain something in an area that's not of interest to them. You know, like Prabhupada mentions, the bee is licking the outside of the jar of honey. Right? So honey is, yes, that is something that is nourishing to the bee, but not glass. You know? So we're looking in the material world at the external material energy and thinking through that we'll taste rasa. So rasa is nourishing to the soul, but it's only nourishing if it's in connection with Krishna. That's the whole point. Does that make sense? So it appears that we'll get something from it. So that's why then buddhi yoga, using intelligence, we start to understand that, yes, this world is not actually giving us something that we can gain from. Right? But you connect it to Krishna, then you gain something from it. But what you're working with, the medium you're working with, is the medium you work with. Does that make sense? You know, you work with charcoal, you will get black stuff all over your fingers. Right? You work with paint, then you have another, you know, then besides black, you get all kinds of a variety of colors. You know what I'm saying? So it's just the way it works. So since you're dealing with inferior energy, it gives inferior results. Though, because you're doing it under the protection of the internal potency and devotional service, you get the full spiritual benefit. Does that make sense? So that will carry on eternally. But the medium you're working with, it has its shelf life. And if you generally check everything on it, it would expired yesterday. So, yes. Okay, yeah. The Brahmana continued, in the course of the evolutionary process, which is caused by fruit of activities due to undesirable material sense gratification, I have received this human form of life, which can lead to the heavenly planets, to liberation, to the lower species, or to rebirth among human beings. Right? So, the evolutionary process is caused by fruit of activities. If you're engaged in devotional service, there is no evolutionary process. Right? The evolutionary process is you're going through the different species of life, gradually going up, because you've performed an activity that's put you in a lower species. Or you've come to human form and done something to elevate yourself to a higher species. But because it's still material, it's temporary, you come back again. So only if you apply it in spiritual, then that will get you beyond. Right? So the evolutionary process is from fruit of activities. Because if it's wondered why it's like that, that's because the living entity has material desire. Give up material desire, no evolutionary process. So this can't be, all this said is, the modern theory of evolution is just happening, which they can't prove it does, but they'll say it does because they need some answers some way. But when you introduce the point of the soul, the Supreme Lord, his desire, the process is established by him to please him, then it starts. The evolutionary process starts to make sense. Does that make sense? Yeah? Srila Prabhupada comments, All living entities within this material world are undergoing the cycle of birth and death according to the laws of nature. This struggle of birth and death in different species may be called the evolutionary process. But in the Western world, it has been wrongly explained. Darwin's theory of evolution from animal to man is incomplete because the theory does not present the reverse condition, namely evolution from man to animal. He only shows that you're going up, but not down. You know, and then that has a problem because they're saying that what you've come to now is the pinnacle. But if you take from what Lucy looked like, whatever, how many millions of years ago, and then up to now, the way her features have changed, what's not going to say that the same process isn't going to keep going? She had a shorter nose, so after a while, everyone will have a really nice Jewish nose. You know, so therefore the idea of this, you know, how you say Christian nose, you know, or Roman nose, is actually not the full evolutionary thing. The Jews were before they started, so they are farther in the evolutionary process. They'll have a bigger nose. So how do you know that's not going to happen? Right? Or the forehead got bigger. How do you know we're not going to end up with, who are those guys that had the huge heads that were bald?
Oh.
Yeah, you know, you ever seen that? There was some kind of sitcom with these guys, with huge monster heads.
Oh, coneheads?
Coneheads, yeah, like that. How do you know it's not going that direction? You know, so everything, the arms were real long. How do you know it's not going to be little short little things, you know, after a while? You know, it's just, that's the whole thing, is that they can't say. It's so speculative, it just keeps going. You know, does that make sense? Yeah, so that's a problem. Okay. In this verse, however, evolution has been very well explained on the strength of Vedic authority. Human life, which is obtained in the course of the evolutionary process, is a chance for elevation, swarga pavarga, or for the degradation, tirascham punar asya cha. If one uses this human form of life properly, he can elevate himself to the higher planetary systems, where material happiness is many thousands of times better than on this planet. Or one may cultivate knowledge by which to become free from the evolutionary process and be reinstated in one's original spiritual life. This is called apavarga, or liberation. Material life is called pavarga because here we are subject to five different states of suffering, represented by the letters pa, pa, bha, bha, ma. Pa means parishrama, very hard labor. Pa means pena, or foam from the mouth. For example, sometimes we see a horse foaming at the mouth with heavy labor. Bha means pyarata, disappointment. In spite of so much hard labor, at the end we find disappointment. Bha means bhaya, or fear. In material life, one is always in the blazing fire of fear, since no one knows what will happen next. Finally, ma means mritu, or death. When one attempts to nullify these five different statuses of life, papa bhabha ma, one achieves apavarga, or liberation from the punishment of material existence. Oh, it's probably quoted, because this would have been seventh canto, so it's probably quoted. Because different cantos, because they're focusing on that, they'll quote from each other. In here.
You know. Just remember.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's like that. I think also in Gita, Prabhupada explains it. It's not an uncommon point. But not always he gives the full explanation like this. But this is the point, is one has to work hard to get anything from that one. You know, it's so hard, lay one foams at the mouth. From that you get your results, but you're disappointed or you don't get the results. You're fearful because the idea is gain will create safety. Safety means, you know, means the position we think will mean no fear. But because we're disappointed in gaining what we want, therefore we're still fearful. And then at the end we get death. So... complete package, you could say, yes. So that's why apavarga means then to act in devotional service, so you end that cycle, right? So then you go on to the transcendental platform where none of these are there. Okay. And the couches are white. The Brahmana continued. In this form of life, men and women unite for the sexual pleasure of sex. But by actual experience, we have observed that none of them are happy. Therefore, seeing the contrary results, I have stopped taking part in materialistic activities. Srila Prabhupada comments. As stated by Prahlad Maharaj, oh, there must be a bit of a group here, so they're preaching. Uriya, okay. Yes, like Uriya is when you speak Bengali with pan, and then you get Uriya. So you have to not fully say, because if you say too much, then the pan will come out. So you have to make this kind of...
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare
Krishna. Okay, Srila Prabhupada. Or maybe it's a paragraph group. So they're getting the group to... So he's explaining that they're not to the point of ma, so they can still chant. Okay. Srila Prabhupada comments, as stated by Prahlad Maharaj, yan maitunari grihamedi sukham hitu cham. Srimad Bhagavatam 7.9.45. Man and woman both seek sexual enjoyment. But when they are united by the ritualistic ceremony of marriage, they are happy for some time. But finally there is dissension. And thus there are so many cases of separation and divorce. Although every man and woman is actually eager to enjoy life through sexual unity, the result is disunity and distress. Footnote 16. This is confirmed by Prahlad Maharaj. A materialistic person thinking himself very advanced in intelligence continually acts for economic development. But again and again, as enunciated in the Vedas, he is frustrated by material activities, either in this life or in the next. Indeed, the results one obtains are inevitably the opposite of those one desires. Because you always desire one thing, but there's something that comes along with it. You might get the specific external result you were looking for, but the effect of it is not what you're looking for. Right? It's always like that. So that's why if it's in devotional service, then all these things can work very nicely. Because otherwise, then material activities, when it says the pavarga, it means that. There's always going to be. It's just a matter of how much more or how much less. Like, how hard is Indra having to work to maintain his position when you have Vritrasura there? Right? So he's having to work very hard. Right? And he's not getting the results he wants. Right? So that's the problem. So he's disappointed. Right? And then we see is that he'll go on at some point, he'll die, come back here. Vritrasura died, he went back to Godhead. Right? You know, so that, yeah, this is not fair. Yeah. And so that's the whole point. That's why devotional service is so much more rewarding. The results are so much greater. Like that. The same activity, eternal results, the other one, then temporary results that always end in disappointment. Okay. Thus, the Vedic injunctions for marriage offer a concession to human society. The idea being that a man and woman united in ritualistic marriage ceremony should help one another advance in spiritual life. So ritualistic marriage ceremony means you're doing the whole process. Because otherwise, Gandharva, where you just are interested in each other and therefore get involved in sexual activities, that's Gandharva, but that's not recommended. So the ritualistic means where you go through the process, you know, and do the sacrifice that is there, and that establishes the different principles of how to interact, then that has a higher purpose. That's for elevation. But this modern form of Gandharva, then that's just for sense gratification. So that's why Prabhupada mentions it, you know, twice, the ritualistic marriage. Because he could just say marriage, but then any of the eight. But he says ritualistic, which means on the side of the four recommended. Right? Because in the others, it's not so much ritual. You give some gift, you get the girl, you steal the girl, you just consent to sexual activities, or she's, you know, how you say, in some form of unconsciousness, and you take her away. Like that. So there's no ritual in those sides. So the ritual is on the sides that are recommended. Does that make sense? You know, the Brahma, I say, Daivata, Prajapatya, and Arsha. So these all have the same ritual as far as the wedding goes, but how it came about, then you have four different approaches. Does that make sense? Does it make sense? Why not? Means that Brahma means the from the girl's side of the family, they worked it out. The parents worked out the marriage and the girl's given in charity. The Daiva means the father's doing a sacrifice and like that, and at the sacrifice, then the priest that comes happens to be very qualified, and he thinks, oh, here's a good person to marry my daughter. It's almost as good, but he didn't make the endeavor. It just happened by providence. Right? Prajapatya means the girl chose the boy because the father couldn't make the arrangement. Or she didn't like the father's arrangement, like Rukmini. Right? So she made the arrangement through her offices. Right? Then that's there, but then, you know, you have the marriage ceremony. So, and all these, and then Arsha means that the boy's side of the family comes and asks for the girl. Like that. So that's the order of what's good or not. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. And then on the other side, I think you have Rakshasa, you know, Gandharva, then Asurak, and then Paisach. So Paisach and Asurak should never be used. Buying the girl and, what do you call it? Getting the girl when she's not conscious.
Which one is what?
Asurak means paying for the girl. But in some communities, if you don't pay for the girl, no one keeps the girl. Right? Hence, do not bury your daughters in the sand. So therefore, they've instituted, you know, the Acharya has instituted Asurak marriage, because otherwise no one will take care of the girls. Right? So, you know, so it's but the standard is you shouldn't have to do that. So it's they're considered, I mean, you can do it, but it's not recommended. Paisach, just nobody does that. That's not good at all. That means she's sleeping, she's intoxicated, she's unconscious, you know, she walked out in the street, got hit by a bus, and then you take her home and then she's your wife. Yeah, you don't do that kind of stuff. Does that make sense? Yeah.
And Rakshasa?
Rakshasa's kidnapping. So the Kshatriyas might use the other two in the other three ages, but in Kali Yuga, then they're also banned. So in Kali Yuga, these last four you can't use. The first four you can. Of the first four, Brahma is the recommended. The ritual is the same in all of them, but it's recommended that it's come from the father, you know, between the father and discussions with the wife and daughter, they work out the proper arrangement. You know, like we see with Kardama Muni. That's a good Brahma wedding.
In Gandharva, just mutual attraction?
Just mutual, de facto. You know, like that. De facto, one night stand, you know, hey, say, you know, whatever you like to call it. You know, depending on the particular situation and community, they have different names for it. Okay. Otherwise, also known as, you know, how you say, high school. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Thus, the Vedic injunctions for marriage offer a concession to human society. The idea being that a man and woman united in ritualistic marriage ceremony should help one another advance in spiritual life. So that's the idea. They'll assist each other in that. It's not just for sense gratification. Right? So that's why he's saying it's a concession. Because otherwise it's not necessary, so therefore then one can just be absorbed in spiritual life. But because there's the interest in sexual, how you say, relationships, therefore then concession is given that they can go into this with the idea that they help each other in spiritual life. So then spiritual life is there and, you know, desires fulfilled, so it works out. Right? But he was saying that he was saying just in his experience there's always difficulty with it, so he decided, why bother? Like that. You know, so if one has that Audi car, then one wouldn't get married. Like that. So that's the principle. If you don't need to get married, don't. If you need to get married, do. That's the principle. Okay. A human being should eat prasad offered to the deity and should enjoy sex life according to the Vedic injunctions.
What's the connection?
Don't get into that. Okay. We'll leave that for another age. Like that. I don't know. Give it some time, then you could have this as a discussion. Because the point is you have to be able to discuss it from the point of discussing the science. Problem is, as soon as you get involved in the discussion, people think more of the art and they get distracted and it's disturbing and why is he talking about that and, you know, all this stuff. So therefore...
No, it was just the connection between the two I like.
Because...
That's what I like.
Because in the Upadeshamrita, it mentions from eating, then there's the stomach and then the genitals. So... Basically, whatever you eat has an effect on the genitals. You eat more sattvic things, it has less of an effect. You eat more rajasic, yeah, like this. So the two go together. Plus, you could say, bottom line, in household life, these are actually the only two enjoyments. Right? And so since sex isn't something that can always be on, you know, as a regular thing on the table, and we generally don't recommend the table, right? You know, then that means then eating is something that you can do. So life can be enjoyed, you know, 3, 4 times, 6 times, whatever is your method, you know. Hobbits, I think, I'm not sure how many that is, but, you know, does that make sense? So it's a more viable, like that. Does that make sense? Okay. So we're good? Okay, yeah. Okay. So you can see why we don't go farther.
Yeah.
Like yeah.
Good.
Okay. Okay. He should engage himself in the business of Krishna consciousness. He should save himself from the fearful condition of material existence. And he should sleep only to recover from fatigue due to working hard. Right? So, because your work, doing your service, you're doing your activities, what's necessary, your duties, then you take rest to relieve yourself of that. You don't just sleep for fun, and that, because that will put you actually into the mode of ignorance. When you sleep more necessary, it makes you more want to sleep, because there's no end to the sleeping. So, you know, bears sleep for 6 months, and when they wake up, they're still grumpy. So, you know, it's not that it's a real solution. You know, you think that they'd wake up and they'd be fabulous, you know, dancing around on their tiptoes and like that. But no, they wake up, they're grumpy.
They're hungry.
Yeah, the whole point is it's going to happen. Right? I think sleeping burns up like 500 calories, you know. It's like... Okay. The learned Brahmin said that since everything is misused by fruitive workers, he had retired from all fruitive activities. Right? So even though there is ways that you can use this properly, as we see by so many of the great personalities and acharyas, nobody's using it that way. Right? So the fruitive workers don't use it properly. And so they entangle themselves in samsara. Devotees can use it properly. because they'll connect everything to Krishna, and this way they'll put an end to Pavarga. But for the materialists, they're, you know, how you say, committed to Pavarga. Though they want the opposite of that. No, we're doing this to be happy, but they always end up not happy. So he retired from fruitive activities. Studying, he saw fruitive activities don't work. So he's given that up. Does that make sense? Yeah. According to Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, now Prahlad Maharaj asks a question. I'm just thinking it might be, I don't know, maybe, I think you've been doing it as a regular thing, but somehow or another, just now it struck me. Saying according to Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur.
Yes.
Then it's giving the kind of position as if, okay, that's his opinion.
Ah, okay.
You know, so Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur points out in the next few verses, or, you know, something that's direct. Yeah, I think.
But he didn't reply.
He didn't reply.
Why, he's fat? Did he?
He's getting to that.
Oh, no, because he asked more questions.
No, but that means that answer brings up more questions, so then you have to balance all those questions, and eventually, just like Sukadeva Goswami, they ask six questions, I think, in the first chapter. He spends 12 cantos answering it. But as they go, they ask more questions, and then, you know, that is a discussion about something else. Right? You know, so, because this is, what do you call it? This is the discussion with Yudhishthira Maharaj. And he's telling the story of Prahlad Maharaj, who is then, you know, asking all these questions. So, you know, so in other words, somebody asks a good question, but in it you give reference to something else where further good questions are being asked. So then everything becomes very nicely taken care of. And then some of the things may, oh, that's interesting, or that's different, or, you know, like that. So then there'll be more questions.
Incidental narrations, like we saw in the Vedanta Sutra, this is part of incidental.
Okay, just goes like that. Yes, thank you. So, yeah, so it's all part of, because it's about Krishna, then it works very nicely. The same thing's happening in Mahabharata, but most of the stories aren't transcendental. So in here, then it's all about the transcendental position. So even if you're talking about someone who's not transcendental, the viewpoint will be from the transcendental position. Right? Because Vyasadeva was expecting that people would, by hearing it, would take that as the natural course. But Narad Muni pointed out people aren't going to do that. They're going to take, you know, the mundane side and leave the spiritual. Okay. Okay, according to Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, now Prahlad Maharaj asks a question. But sometimes one gets happiness by actions. Why should one give up action completely? The Brahmana replied that happiness actually is the swarup of the jiva. Right? So it's not coming from your actions, it's just the jiva naturally is happy. The actual form of life for the living entities is one of spiritual happiness, which is real happiness. This happiness can be achieved only when one stops all materialistic activities. Just like someone goes out, let's say, into nature and just for that moment looks at everything and they stop doing something material technically and they're just appreciating Krishna's potencies. And then there'll be some happiness there for a moment. And then after that, then they'll get into, okay, this is great, I want to stay, you know, we'll camp here. And then they start the materialistic and then they start suffering. Material sense enjoyment is simply imagination, right? Because you think, if this happens, I will enjoy. So it's actually imagination. So if it goes that way, then you'll say, I'm happy, because it went in line with your imagination. And if it didn't go in line with imagination, then you'll say, I'm not happy. So technically, it's imagined in both ways.
If we say that this will bring less suffering, then we are more realistic, less illusion.
Means this viewpoint.
Instead of saying that I'll be happy, that we agree, no happiness.
Okay.
Then we just say we will suffer less.
Yeah, that's a way to do it.
It's more realistic.
But the point is, it's more realistic that we'll suffer less. But at the same time as suffering less will make us happy. So we're stuck with the same principle. What's our motive for either is the happiness of gain. But happiness is the nature of the soul. That's what he's pointing out. So if you just do activities of the nature of the soul, that's when you're actually happy. So it's not about trying to enjoy more or suffer less. That's why we see devotees don't ask for either. They don't ask for material facility. They don't ask for liberation. They ask to be always absorbed in you know, hearing and chanting and remembering the Lord. Because by that, that will make them actually happy. So if you do the same activity in connection to Krishna, you'll find you're happy. That's because that's the nature of the soul. Therefore, considering this subject matter, I have ceased from all material activities and am lying down here. Because he said, because his point was, is you're lying down here and you're fat. Right? So then he's addressing why he's lying down here. Because he studied fruitive activities. He saw that they're not going to give any happiness. Happiness desired is imagined. So therefore, all activity on that platform is only to get material results. He doesn't need those results, so he's doing nothing. But he's actually able to do nothing. He's not sitting there and, I'm going to do nothing, and after, you know, 30 seconds, you start to, you know, drum your fingers and this, and look around, what can, you know, like that. We're not talking that. So it's not that, okay, I'm going to do nothing, I'm lying down here, going to your room, get your yoga mat, put it down, you know, put it, well, this isn't the best place, you know, put it somewhere else, you know, no, we're just, yeah. Srila Prabhupada comments, simply cultivating knowledge that materialistic activities cannot give one happiness, and that one should consequently cease from such activities is insufficient. Right? So, he's a devotee, he knows that. The other one is also self-realized, so he's just giving the opening to it. Right? So the Prabhupada's pointing out here is we shouldn't think that because he's going along these are great personalities that this is actually the goal. No, this is just part of actually the situation. Does that make sense? Because for us, making adjustments in the material environment is actually only situational. Because the goal is to please Krishna. Does that make sense? Yeah. One should cease from materialistic activities and take up spiritual activities. Then the solution to the problem will be achieved. Spiritual activities are activities performed according to the order of Krishna. Anukulyena Krishna Anushilanam. Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Lila 19.167. Right? So it's according to the order of Krishna. Not that we just say it's connected to Krishna by our order, but it's Krishna's order. So this means he's ordered that that's what one should do, but he also gives a recommendation how it should be done. Right? So you can either look at it on the mechanics of the thing, by his laws, so you're following his laws, in accordance with Dharma, or you're understanding him as a person and following things to please him. Right? These are your options. If one does whatever Krishna says, his activities are not material. For example, when Krishna fought in response to the order of Krishna, his activities were not material. Fighting for sense gratification is a materialistic activity, but fighting by the order of Krishna is spiritual, right? That's why the first chapter of Gita is, you know, setting the scene. So we see as Arjuna is going for the point of, they're both going to fight, but we see Duryodhana has obviously established himself that is purely mundane. It's not even actually following nicely Dharma. It's actually Artha while he's doing it. Then we see as Arjuna, he's talking Dharma, but Dharma from a materialistic point of view. So then that gives rise to then him getting spiritual instructions from Krishna. So then we see is that the difference in the same situation between the divine mentality and the demoniac mentality. Fighting for sense gratification is a materialistic activity, but fighting by the order of Krishna is spiritual. By spiritual activities, one becomes eligible to go back home, back to Godhead, and then enjoy blissful life eternally. Here in the material world, everything is but a mental concoction that will never give us real happiness. But we may get some temporary happiness, but it won't be real because it doesn't last for the soul. Real happiness is happiness that lasts for the soul. It's eternal. When we say eternal, we mean, here we say we taste something, it's nice, and that was great, and then it goes away. Spiritual world, it tastes something nice because it's Krishna Prasad. That happiness remains eternally. Right? And then by the activities, then that just keeps increasing. That's why we say it increases. It's not that it goes away. But here, you have to do something again because that happiness you got went away. Then you do again, and then it goes away. Do again, it goes away. Right? Okay. Okay, footnote 17. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "Oh, Partha, when a man gives up all varieties of desire for sense gratification, which arise from mental concoction, and when his mind, thus purified, finds satisfaction in the self alone, then he is said to be in pure transcendental consciousness." Bhagavad Gita 2:55. Right. So mental concoction, we say, this will make me happy. But if we work by the self alone, I am the soul, I'm servant of Krishna, so therefore whatever I do is connected to Krishna, that will give satisfaction. But if we think, no, I'll do this because that will make me happy, then it tends to not. But it means, doesn't mean that you're not going to get something out of it, but because it's temporary, it doesn't satisfy the soul. So we're not saying people aren't doing things and becoming happy. We're just saying it's temporary, and then it goes away. Right? So that's the problem. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. The practical solution, therefore, is to cease from materialistic activities and engage in spiritual activities. Yagyar tat kamano nyatra loko yam karma bandhanaha. Bhagavad Gita 3:9. If one works for the sake of pleasing the Supreme Lord, Yajna or Vishnu, one is in liberated life. If one fails to do so, however, he remains in a life of bondage. So that's the whole idea. Since we're giving up material and practicing spiritual, what is recommended is activities within spiritual. Right? And so therefore, then we do those activities to please Krishna. Since we're going to work to please Krishna, how would Krishna like to be pleased? So Arjuna had his idea how he was going to please Krishna. And Krishna said, no, that's not going to please me. He was a Kshatriya, he should fight. Right? So that's the whole point, is that, okay, so then he's going to fight. What are the rules of fighting? What are the techniques? Why does the Shastra recommend? Krishna's given that, so that you fight for Krishna means you use what Shastra says in the way of fighting. Right? So whatever you're doing, then whatever Shastra recommends, that you use, then it works. Right? That's the whole point. So you're changing the consciousness. And in that way, then you're doing the work. But it's generally you see is that someone's going to work within their nature anyway. So there's a good chance of much of what one's doing or how you've situated yourself is according to your nature. So within that, then, what does Shastra recommend how you perform that? Do that for Krishna. Does that make sense? Otherwise, why would we give up mental speculation in the way of sense gratification and then maintain mental speculation when it comes to Krishna consciousness? You know, it's just not done. Is that? Yeah. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments on the same verse. Happiness is the sarup of the jiva. How does this manifest? This happiness arises from detachment from all thirst for objects, which arises from actions. Detachment is the body which will produce spiritual bliss. Right, so we're using this body, but you have gross and subtle bodies. So the subtle body of detachment, that will actually give you happiness. Right? Just as one cannot enjoy without a body, so without renunciation of enjoyment, one cannot experience the bliss of Atma. Seeing that material enjoyment arises from desires that are flickering, and therefore distasteful, I remain enjoying the happiness of the Atma, which is by nature eternal. And I sleep on the bed of divine flowers in the form of detachment. This explains the case of his being fat and his enjoyment. You know, and why he's lying on the ground. He's lying on the the bed of divine flowers of detachment. We just see some dirt, but reality doesn't make sense. Fat. He shouldn't be fat? Okay, let's look like this. We have, you have the happy Buddha. Is it here? He's fat. Like that. You know. The skinny Buddhas, there's different qualities attributed to them. Right? And I think the arhats, I don't know that any of them are known for being happy. And so none of them are fat, I don't think. Right? No? Are any of the arhats fat? In the Buddhist temple, you have all those guys sitting there, the guy with a stick sticking in his ear and going, ooh, and all those guys. No, there's some, they're weird guys. You know.
There is saying going that fat people are usually more happy.
Yeah.
And kind.
Yeah. Well, they don't have to worry. If you get out of hand, they just sit on you. So, you know, what's to be worried about? Right? So, yeah. No, it's there, because it's...
If that were true, all Americans would be kind.
And happy. True. And they, what do you call it? And when they did the research, then I think it was Guam or something? Or that side?
Did someone beat us?
They would be the happiest in the world.
Oh.
Yeah, the, yeah, like, you know, 500 kilos, oh. You know, that kind of...
Are they fat?
Yeah, some of them over there. I think the fat is... the fattest are always Samoans, I think, who live a Western lifestyle.
Happy?
I'm not sure. Definitely.
At least
acharyas in the, you know, the process. But in any case, the point is he'll discuss this fatness. Like that. You seem to be specifically worried about the fatness.
To get rid of it.
I see. Means he's fat and he's happy. You know, when everybody else gets fat, they're not happy. Why is he happy?
Yeah, that's right.
He should not be happy. He should be on a diet. Or at least do some exercise.
He's on the python diet.
Huh?
He's on the python diet.
He's on the python diet. Yeah, that's true.
So that's
he's on the python diet. Yeah. Yeah, you can just see that on the television when the 3 o'clock slots in the afternoon. You know, try the new python diet. Yeah. Yes, okay. The Brahman continued, in this way the conditioned soul living within the body forgets his self-interest because he identifies himself with the body. Well, actually, you always say fat and happy, right? Because generally goes, the one that is not fat and presents themselves as happy, everyone else thinks they must be happy because they're not fat. But in reality, they're not happy.
There's a lot of energy not to be happy.
Yeah, so much work, you know, how you say. And then at the end, no one cares anyway. So it's like... The Brahman continued, in this way, the conditioned soul living within the body forgets his self-interest because he identifies himself with the body. Because the body is material, his natural tendency is to be attracted by the varieties of the material world, right? So the body is material. It can perceive the material world. He becomes naturally attracted to the material world. Because he identifies with the body. You identify with the soul, then you still see the world through the senses, but then you identify it with the soul. Therefore, you see it from the spiritual platform. Does that make sense? Thus, the living entity suffers the miseries of material existence. Just as a deer, because of ignorance, cannot see the water within the well covered by grass, but runs after water elsewhere. The living entity covered by the material body does not see the happiness within himself, but runs after happiness in the material world. Srila Prabhupada comments. This is an accurate example depicting how the living entity, because of lack of knowledge, runs after happiness outside his own self. When one understands his real identity as spiritual being, he can understand the supreme spiritual being, Krishna. and the real happiness exchanged between Krishna and oneself. It is very interesting to note how this verse points to the body's growth from the spiritual soul. The modern materialistic scientist thinks that life grows from matter, but actually the fact is that matter grows from life. The life, or the spirit soul, is compared herein to water, from which clumps of matter grown in the form of grass. One who is ignorant of scientific knowledge of the spirit soul does not look inside the body to find happiness in the soul. Instead, he goes outside to search for happiness, just as a deer without knowledge of the water beneath the grass goes out to the desert to find water. The Krishna conscious movement is trying to remove the ignorance of misled human beings who are trying to find water outside the jurisdiction of life. So the whole point is the identity has to be with the soul. You can't use other identities. You may, in your application of service, apply what kind of qualities, you know, guna and karma one has. But that's only because, you know, because that's why. Because then you get a better result, and that result's for Krishna. That makes sense? So, to use not the spiritual identity, use the material identity, and then use it speculatively, you know, to for serving Krishna, that's really not going to get a very good result. Right? Does that make sense? So that's why it has to be spirit. That's the only identity. Others are, it's not that you have to identify with it to use it. Right? Does that make sense? Potatoes are potatoes because they're potatoes. Not because we're potatoes, therefore we work with the potatoes that way. Does that make sense? Yeah. In the following five verses, 30 to 34, the Brahmana describes how the expected happiness from materialistic activities turns out to be suffering. Right? Because he made the point before, now I'll explain it. The living entity tries to achieve happiness and rid himself of the causes of distress. But because the various bodies of the living entities are under the full control of material nature, all his plans in different bodies, one after another, are ultimately baffled. Right? Because we are using the body to remove the problems of the body, but the body is not actually controlled by us. It's controlled by the modes of nature. Right? So therefore, how one will get rid of the suffering of that's due to the body, because we're not actually in control of it. So. Materialistic activities are always mixed with three kinds of miserable conditions: adiatmika, adidaivika, and adibhautika. Therefore, even if one achieves some success by performing such activities, what is the benefit of this success? One is still subjected to birth, death, old age, disease, and the reactions of his fruitive activities. I am actually seeing how a rich man who is a victim of his senses is very greedy to accumulate wealth, and therefore suffers from insomnia due to fear from all sides, despite his wealth and opulence. Those who are considered materially powerful and rich are always full of anxieties because of governmental laws, thieves and rogues, enemies, family members, animals, birds, persons seeking charity, the inevitable time factor, and even their own selves. Right, because if they can't control in certain areas, then even they're afraid of themselves, what they'll do. Right? Thus, they're invariably afraid. Those in human society who are intelligent should give up the original cause of lamentation, illusion, fear, anger, attachment, poverty, and unnecessary labor. The original cause of all these is the desire for unnecessary prestige and money. Because right, if you have unnecessary prestige, then that gets you to the point where then you don't use the money properly, so then what's the result? You end up poor. So that's the whole idea, is that, no, it's you know. Srila Prabhupada comments. Here is the difference between Vedic civilization and the modern demoniac civilization. Vedic civilization concerned itself with how to achieve self-realization. And for this purpose, one was recommended to have a small income to maintain body and soul together. Right? Small means how what's necessary. According to one's conditioning, according to one's position, according to one's nature, then how much you need. You don't need more, because more than that's greed. That's the whole point. Greed means when lust is, you know, out of control. You want something, but even you get it, you still just need more and more. Like a, what do you call it? I remember this one kid. He was 3 years old. And, you know, when he would sit down with everybody to eat, you know, you come by and give a little bit and then keep serving. He wouldn't have that. You had to give him how much he wanted on the plate before he'd even start eating. And what he wanted on the plate would generally make, you know, a hearty brahmachari proud. You know, it was a ridiculous amount. And then he'd start, and he'd only eat a little bit because he was 3. But that's greed. Yeah. Okay. We recommend that as soon as money accumulates in our Krishna conscious movement, 50% of it should be invested in printing books and 50% for expenditures, especially in establishing centers all over the world. The managers of the Krishna conscious movement should be extremely cautious in regard to this point. Otherwise, money will be the cause of lamentation, illusion, fear, anger, material attachment, material poverty, and unnecessary hard work. It's just like this. Imagine that your temple has a go-down full of all kinds of books. Is any manager going to be interested to come to your temple and take over? No. But let's say you have a big bank account. Then everybody's interested. Yeah, no, I could. He's doing this, but I could do so much more. Like that, yes. So that's Prabhupada's point. Okay. Otherwise, money will be the cause of lamentation, illusion, fear, anger, material attachment, material poverty, and unnecessary hard work. When I was alone in Vrindavan, I never attempted to construct mats or temples. Rather, I was fully satisfied with the small amount of money I could gather by selling back the Godhead. And thus, I would provide for myself and also print the literature. Right? So he's meaning he's printing literature and he's maintaining. So that's what he's doing with his money. When I went to foreign countries, I lived according to the same principle. But when Europeans and Americans began to give money profusely, I started temples and deity worship. The same principle should be followed. Whatever money is collected should be spent for Krishna, not a farthing for sense gratification. This is the Bhagavad principle. So if there's a little bit of money, you stick to the essential. If there's more, then you can expand on facility. But it's not that the facilities are what makes devotional service. Is that... The Brahmin continued. The bee and the python are two excellent spiritual masters who give us exemplary instructions regarding how to be satisfied by collecting only a little and how to stay in one place and not move. Does he have the multiple spiritual masters? That's 11, can't
That's 11.
Yeah. 11, okay. The 22, that's 11. Okay.
Right. And is it 22
or 24? Something.
It's
something. Quite a bit.
Substantial.
Yes. From the bumblebee, I have learned to be unattached to accumulating money, for although money is as good as honey, anyone can kill its owner and take it away. Like you have the bees are there, they collect all the honey, and then when, you know, those who know, they know what phase of the moon and everything is there in the season, and then they go and they just smoke out the bees and then take half the hive and walk off. And that's if they're nice. Right? So that's the whole point. They work so hard, and then it just all disappears. That's why I said, you get money, engage it in the Lord's service, because then, you know, who can take away your devotional service? That can't be taken away. That's the whole. Srila Prabhupada comments, the honey gathered in the comb is taken away by force. Therefore, one who accumulates money should realize that he may be harassed by the government, or by thieves, or even killed by enemies. Especially in this age of Kali Yuga, it is said that instead of protecting the money of the citizens, the government itself will take away the money with the force of law. The learned Brahmin had therefore decided that he should not accumulate any money. One should own only as much as he immediately needs. There is no need to keep a big balance at hand, along with the fear that it may be plundered by the government or by thieves. Does that make sense? So... like that. The Brahmana continued, I do not endeavor to get anything. I am satisfied with whatever is achieved in its own way. If I do not get anything, I am patient and unagitated like a python and lie down in this way for many days. Sometimes I eat a very small quantity and sometimes a great quantity. Sometimes the food is very palatable and sometimes it is stale. Sometimes prasad is offered with great respect and sometimes food is given neglectfully. Sometimes I eat during the day and sometimes at night. Thus I eat what is easily available. To cover my body, I use whatever is available, whether it be linen, silk, cotton, bark, or deerskin, according to my destiny, and I am fully satisfied and unagitated. Sometimes I lie on the surface of the earth, sometimes on leaves, grass, or stone, sometimes on a pile of ashes, or sometimes by the will of others, in a palace on a first-class bed with pillows. O my Lord, sometimes I bathe myself very nicely, smear sandalwood pulp all over my body, put on flower garland, and dress in fine garments and ornaments. Then I travel like a king on the back of an elephant or on a chariot or horse. Sometimes, however, I travel naked, like a person haunted by a ghost. Different people are of different mentalities. Therefore, it is not my business to either praise them or to blaspheme them. I only desire their welfare, hoping that they will agree to become one with the Supersoul, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. Footnote 18, Srila Prabhupada comments. No. Footnote 18, the Supreme Personality of Godhead said, one should neither praise nor criticize the conditioned nature and activities of other persons. Rather, one should see this world as simply the combination of material nature and the enjoying souls, all based on the one absolute truth. Srimad Bhagavatam 11.28.1. Right, so Krishna, in the 11th canto, gives all these conclusions on the technique of spiritual life, you know, how to properly practice. So you're not praising, you're criticizing. The material platform, what's praiseworthy, what's to criticize? Because it doesn't have anything to do with the soul. It's all just the modes of nature. It's all part of the universal form. Does that make sense? So therefore, what's to praise or to criticize? Right? Now, something's use in devotional service or not, somebody's application in devotional service or not, that's something to discuss. But just the conditioned nature, why get involved? Right? So to relate back to that and take that as the important thing to judge, then that's mundane. Like that. So, Srila Prabhupada comments, as soon as one comes to the platform of Bhakti Yoga, one understands fully the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudeva, is the goal of life. Vasudevas samam iti samahatma sudurlabha. This is the instruction of all the Vedic literature. Vidaischa saveraham eva vedyaha. Bhagavad Gita 15.15. Sarvadharmam parityajya mam ekam sharanam vraja. Bhagavad Gita 18.66. There's no use in praising someone for material qualifications or blaspheming him for material disqualifications. In the material world, good and bad have no meaning because if one is good, he may be elevated to a higher planetary system, and if one is bad, he may be degraded to the lower planetary systems. People of different mentalities are sometimes elevated and sometimes degraded. But this is not the goal of life. Rather, the goal of life is to become free from elevation and degradation and take to Krishna consciousness. Right? So the reason that something is said to be good and bad or pious or sinful is it elevates you in the material world, it degrades you in the material world. Right? That's if you're going by Shastra. Otherwise, then it becomes speculative. People will say, no, this is okay, this is fine, and this is bad. So then sometimes due to motive passion, they'll take on things that's good because it gets more sense gratification, it's bad because it gets less. Therefore, sense control, all these different things will be considered bad. Or it's the mode of ignorance where it'll be the exact opposite. Something is properly seen as improper, improperly seen as proper. So it becomes totally speculative. So then there is no real meaning to, it's illusory, the concept of good and bad. And the other, yes, it's good and bad according to Shastra, but the problem is because you do good, you'll be elevated to the heavenly planets, but with time you'll do bad and go down and be degraded. So you just keep going around and around. Right? So the idea is that, therefore, one should give that up and just take up devotional service. Because that, then you're giving up the concept of degradation or elevation. Does that make sense? Yeah? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Therefore, a saintly person does not discriminate between what is supposedly good and supposedly bad. Rather, he desires for everyone to be happy in Krishna consciousness, which is the ultimate goal of life. So if you're working with that, then you're looking at be Krishna conscious. Then people will, as they become purified, they'll adjust their lifestyle and everything to make it in line with Krishna consciousness. But the focus is Krishna consciousness, not what's good or bad. Is that, yeah. The Brahmana continued, the mental concoction of discrimination between good and bad should be accepted as one unit and then invested in the mind, which then should be invested in the false ego. The false ego should be invested in the total material energy. This is the process of fighting false discrimination. Srila Prabhupada comments. This verse describes how a yogi can become free from material affection. Because of material attraction, a karmi cannot see himself. Jnanis can discriminate between matter and spirit, but the yogis, the best of whom are the bhakti yogis, want to return home, back to Godhead. The karmis are completely an illusion. The jnanis are neither an illusion nor in positive knowledge. But the yogis, especially the bhakti yogis, are complete on the spiritual platform. Thus a devotee's position is secure. Devotees at once elevated to the spiritual platform. Others, such as jnanis and hatha yogis, can only gradually ascend to the spiritual platform by nullifying their material discrimination on the platform of psychology and nullifying the false ego by which one thinks I am this body, a product of matter. One must merge the false ego into the total material energy and merge the total material energy into the supreme energetic. This is the process of becoming free from material attraction. So the mind, you know, mental concoction of good and bad goes into the mind into the false ego. Because the false ego is, we're not the false ego. Right? So that goes into that. So that's dropped along with that. That goes back into the material energy. Then we see that in connection with the Supreme Lord. So then that means then our discrimination, our use of the mind, our identity, you know, our dealing with the material energy, then is all based on that relationship with the Supreme. Right? That's what we're trying to get to. The Brahmana continued, a learned, thoughtful person must realize that material existence is illusion. This is possible only by self-realization. A self-realized person who has actually seen the truth should retire from all material activities, being situated in a self-realization. Who has seen the truth. So truth has these three levels. Brahmaiti, Paramaiti, Bhagavaniti, Shabiti, all three. So it's not that only if you've seen Krishna and Vrindavan playing the flute and you're out there, you know, arranging his bathwater or something, then you can say, okay, now you've seen the truth. Like that. No, it means when you understand the instructions given by the spiritual master and the authorities in the Bhagavatam, that's seeing the truth, because this is truth. You understand it to that degree, that much you can explain. That's the whole point. Does that make sense? Because otherwise, what does it mean? Okay, only if you're on that platform, then you can explain things to a guy who's totally in gross material consciousness. You just have to explain he's not his body, he's the spirit soul, we're all servants of the God. Like that. So any devotee can realize that much. So therefore, they've seen the truth, they can explain it. Right? Does that make sense? Prahlad Maharaj, you are certainly a self-realized soul and a devotee of the Supreme Lord. You do not care for public opinion or so-called scriptures. For this reason, I have described to you without hesitation the history of my self-realization. 44-45. Narad Muni continued, after Prahlad Maharaj, the king of the demons, heard these instructions from the saint, he understood the occupational duties of the perfect person, Paramahamsas. Thus he duly worshipped the saint, took his permission, and then left for his own home. 46. Right, so he's mentioning it's just as it comes, that's what he deals with. So if you're self-realized, then you just deal with everything in connection with the Lord, in service to the Lord. Sometimes you get nice facilities, sometimes not. Sometimes you have great things, sometimes not. Whatever is available, that's what you use. You know, if you worry about it too much, that's where you have anxiety. Right? You'll say that, no, if I get this, I'll be happy, but how often do you get what you want? Right? You know, something useful, that you'll get. That's the meaning of satisfaction. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point, is that he, the Paramahamsa, means whatever comes, he just engages it in Krishna's service. That's the whole point. That's the position we're trying to get to. So it's not, you know, this one does this, that one does that. The point is no, it's engaged in Krishna's service. If it's engaged in Krishna's service, we don't worry about it. That's the meaning that he wants beyond the rules, because everything's engaged in Krishna's service. Right? The Paramahamsa doesn't keep money, but if he gets money, he uses it for Krishna. Others work for money, and then they use it for Krishna. He doesn't. But he gets, he uses it for Krishna. So that's the whole idea. That's the meaning of beyond the rules. It's not that you don't use rules, but you're beyond them, because it's not that, it's that the rules, that's what's creating your perfection. Right? Rules are necessary. You want a particular result, you follow a particular thing. But the point is that if you're just connecting everything to Krishna, then you're beyond the rules. That's what we take it beyond the rules means I don't have to follow them. Right? Does that make sense? And the strange thing is who generally has that problem? Right? Neophytes. Yeah, and we generally see that the Uttamas, they follow the rules. Like that, because otherwise the others aren't worried about, oh, I cannot follow rules. Like that. So it's in funny that way. Yes.
Also, it's the point that it's no longer a rule if you, like, it's a direction from Krishna of what he wants. Like, if it's my birthday and you say, what do you want for your birthday? And I say, I want chocolate cake. And then you get me a chocolate cake. That's not a rule that I wanted the chocolate cake. That's like, I'm telling you what I want.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes.
So it's not a rule if you want to follow it.
Yes, yeah, because...
if you don't want to do it.
Yes, that's true. Yeah. Because especially if you see it in the personal platform, then it's only about how to please Krishna, so Shastra tells, because we don't know.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, just like you don't know something, then you try to find out information. Yeah, yeah. Very nice. Okay, very good. Okay. Chapter 14, Ideal Family Life. Although a grihastha should externally be very active in earning his livelihood, he should internally be situated as a fully self-realized person. That's why we started off with that, right? So now what is the basis? Because grihastha life, is, if we want it to be successful, it has to have a foundation, a proper foundation, a proper goal, right? So therefore we saw, okay, the duties and all that, where everyone fits and all that, but then we saw ashram dharma was first explained as brahmachari vanaprast, right? So we understood the element of detachment and this kind of thing, that basis. Then we see Paramahamsa, that's what your goal is. Then within that, now applying that and one's duty, now then you can see family life. Right? Generally think, oh no, but this doesn't require all that. No, but if you don't have all that, this doesn't become ideal family life. Family life, yes. Ideal family life, that's another. We understand? So that's the whole thing. It's a basis, because it's after brahmachari, but it's going somewhere. It's not an end in itself. Right? So it's supposed to come to the platform of detachment. Of that, sannyasa is the best. Of sannyasa, the paramahamsa is the best. So that's the goal. Right? So basis in brahmacharya and goal in paramahamsa. And with that, then you, and then how you're situated according to your duties, you just do that because that's what's supposed to be done. Because if you have this mentality, he's doing his activity, but internally that's not as important. He's just absorbed in Krishna consciousness. So then what would you do? Right? If you're supposed to be engaged in your duty, but you're Krishna conscious, so you're not worried about the benefits of duty, then for you, how would you define what you should do? Right? Since it's said you should be busy. How do you define it? Because you're detached, so it's what you're doing and the benefits you're getting from it aren't of interest. It's the performance of the duty that's of interest. So how do you define that duty? Right? By Shastra. So that means someone who's actually God-conscious, they're detached from the position, so that's why it doesn't matter what it is. All this fighting over who's this and that, no one should be the shooter, that's demeaning, that's degrading, and all that. And this is this words of untages. It's like, you know. Yeah. So, therefore, the whole point is the self-realized soul doesn't worry about that. Like that. Did Lord Chaitanya, what Varna was he?
Brahman.
And did he spend any time with Kolavecha Sridhar? And what Varna was Kolavecha? He was Shudra.
Wouldn't he be a Vaishya because he had his own business? Successful Vaishya.
Yes, no, he was really raking it in there. Yes. He was in the Forbes 7 billion. He's just taking what's growing on his tree and then selling that. So he's just maintaining himself. So it's not business. It's just you can do those things. Shooters can do those things because it's just that. Now, if he has a big orchard and he's hiring people to maintain it, that's business. Yeah. So in other words, it's like this. The guy gets some hats. He goes to the concert. He sells them. Right? Then from the money of that, he buys a lot more hats, and now he starts finding others who want to help in this project. And then he arranges everything for them. They just have to sell the hats. They get their something, they get money, he gets his. And in this way, he keeps growing it, and then he starts manufacturing hats and everything like that. That's business. Okay?
Thank you.
Yes. Okay. Chapter 14 summarizes questions and answers. Maharaja Yudhishthira asked Narad Muni question 7:14 of Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam 7:14:1. Maharaja Yudhishthira inquired from Narad Muni, "O my lord, O great sage, kindly explain how we who are staying at home without knowledge of the goal of life may also easily attain liberation, according to the instructions of the Vedas." So that's then how this topic comes up. So he's explained all the others, and it's very nice. But he hasn't explained, okay, about the grihastha. Right? He's saying, you know, we're grihastas, we're at home, we're doing all these things. How can we attain perfection? Srila Narad Muni answers this question in this chapter and the next. The rhetorical questions uttered by Narad Muni. Munin. So that means... He came from Finland before coming here, or something. But I think it's supposed to be an O. No, Moomin. No. No. Okay. In verse 13, do not come under the study, Adhyaya Prakashika. This chapter describes the occupational duties of the householder according to the time, the country, and the performer. When Yudhishthira Maharaj became very much inquisitive about the occupational duties of the householder, Narad Muni advised him that a grihastha's first duty is to be fully dependent on Vasudeva, Krishna, and try to satisfy him in all respects by executing one's prescribed devotional service. Right? So we see is that you are considering the time, the country, and the performer, but it's in connection with Krishna's satisfaction. You know, what actually that means. The devotional service will depend on the instruction of authorities and the association of devotees who are actually engaged in devotional service. The beginning of devotional service is shravanam, or hearing. One must hear from the mouths of realized souls. In this way, the grihastha's attraction to his wife and children will gradually be reduced. Do we actually want him to come here? I'll come, but... Okay. As for the maintenance of his family, a grihastha, while earning what he requires for his living, must be very conscientious and must not undergo extraordinary endeavors simply to accumulate money and unnecessarily increase in material comforts. Right? It means, what is his actual work? He is not lazy, he puts in his best effort. What comes from that, that's where it goes. Beyond that, works beyond what he can do, what he can maintain, that shouldn't be. Although a grihastha should externally be very active in earning his livelihood, he should internally be situated as a fully self-realized person, without attachment from material gains. His dealings with family members or friends should be performed simply to fulfill their purpose. One should not be extravagantly engaged in this way. Instructions from family members. So here you have, here's the catch 22 here. Okay. So by hearing from the self-realized souls, then the grihastha's attraction to his wife and children will gradually be reduced. But such a person, then he performs his act dealings with family members and friends simply to fulfill their purpose. Right? So that's the thing. As he's self-realized, so it appears he's less attached. I mean, he is less attached, but in the interaction, he takes care of everything that they need. Well, if you say no, he should be more attached, but then he's more attached to himself, so he takes care less. Yeah. So then, you know, and then you don't go ahead spiritually.
Means he sees his duty behind it all. He sees his duty. The duty becomes more important for him to fulfill the needs of the family and so on.
Means the performance of his duties, but he's pleasing Krishna because they're all parts and parcels of the Krishna, so he's taking care of them. So in other words, Krishna's taking care of everybody. A grihastha's taking responsibility that he'll assist in taking care of this particular group of individuals. Krishna's taking care, but he wants to assist in that maintenance. That's grihastha life. Does that make sense? So seeing it like that, then he'll... If he has nothing to fulfill on the material platform, where can he put all his energy? Does that make sense? Just like, for example, does that make sense? So because he doesn't have the attachment there for it, he's just performing the duties. So he'll do the duties all very nicely. The Western mentality means the karmic mentality is, well, if he doesn't have attachment, he won't do it. Or the other is then from the jnana is, if he doesn't have attachment, why would he do it? So you have both these two fighting with each other. But the point is he is able to do it because he's doing it to please Krishna. Because that's what Krishna does. Right? Krishna, that's what he does. He doesn't not. He performs his duties. And is he attached to anything? Nothing. Does that make sense? That's the whole point. That's why it says he's with 16,108 queens. They each have their own palace and all that, but he's totally detached. So he's not attached to his facilities and the beautiful women and everything like that. It's their devotion. That's what he's reciprocating with. But he's doing it in the medium through that, the conjugal rasa. So it takes on the nature of what the masculine, feminine, and husband and wife and all that kind of thing. They use that form. But actually, it's the devotion in that that's attractive. Otherwise, they're not. He's not attached to them. That's why it says he's not attached to Lakshmi. You know, because she's good looking. He's got all the money. He interacts because of the devotion. Because it's eternal, then he'll eternally interact. It's a whole different approach. So that's the thing. Is once we adjust to looking at things in this different way, then we can get the benefit. But as soon as we try to judge it according to our mundane standards, then there's a problem. So when we accept Vedic authority and view it the way the Vedas say, right? Otherwise, we may accept the authority and still view it through karma and jnana. But we have to accept Vedic authority and then give up the attachment to karma and jnana. Then that view, that will be proper. Does that make sense? So that's what we're saying. He's on that transcendental position, so how do you define what he'll do? So he just follows Shastra. He has no need to mentally concoct things that will make him and his family happy. He just follows what Shastra says. And the details in Shastra are so great. You know what I'm saying? Like that. So great. You know, it's like, if you ask devotees, okay, what's varnashram, what are the rules, what are the rules of family life, they'll quote two or three points. Manu gives, you know, thousands. You understand? So the detail is very great. But you have to accept the Vedic authority to be able to appreciate it. And then you have to accept devotional service and the need to be free from karma and jnana to be able to use it properly. Right? Does that make sense? That's why then we depend on Shastra. The definitions that Shastra give, that's what we use. Otherwise, we make it up. Who are we? Since we're faulty, then our mental speculation will end in Pavarga. We follow Shastra, then we'll get Apavarga. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole point. No use arguing. The point is no, this is the fact. The realized souls have said this, so why depend upon the consciousness of a conditioned soul? Go by the consciousness of the realized souls. So even though we may be conditioned, we still discuss on the knowledge and practice and understanding of the realized souls. Using other things are useless. Does that make sense? Yes? Okay. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandini.